على محمد وعلى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
لبيك
حسين لبيك حسين. سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد
صلى الله عليه وسلم
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
الله سبحانه وتعالى again speaks out in Surah Ankabut and says that, does man think that he is going, that he can say, I believe, and get away with it?
Teach us.
A believer, a Muslim, who says, I believe in Allah. Allah is saying that, do you think, or what made you think, that you can say, I believe, and get away with it? No, we are going to try you. We are going to put you through trials and fitna. And hence, Allah is declaring and making it clear that if you are a mu'min, if you claim to be a mu'min, then you are going to be tested. And you are going to be tried. There is no way other than the fact that you are going to be tried. Now, if you are not being tried, or if you're not going through trials, then what Allah says is the truth. You have to worry about your iman. You have to worry about your faith, whether you actually have faith or not. Whether have you made that claim or not, that you are a believer. Other than that, if you are a believer and you are claiming to be a mu'min, then you are going to be tested. And hence, this fitna and this trials that Allah puts us through or we go through in life, this is the subject of these days that we have been discussing. And as I had mentioned before, that there are four reasons. There are four reasons because of which we face trials. One of the reasons has nothing to do with Allah, and that is that there are some trials that are brought about by our own sins, that our own sins bring about. And we went through those sins that bring about trials on us and make us go through sufferings. These sufferings we cannot attribute to Allah, and any trial we go through, we cannot attribute to Allah unless we make sure that we are not doing one of those sins that bring down trials. So that was the first reason. The second reason that we had explained that why we go through sins is because Allah He sees the bigger picture, and He wants to give us a greater reward, or He wants to protect us from a greater harm. So He puts us through the small trials so that we do not end up being harmed in the larger sense. In the greater sense, we are not harmed. This is the second reason. The third reason is that Allah wants to reward us. But this reward that He wants to give, He wants to give it in a place where we can make use of it. We can take advantage of it. And that's why when anyone becomes a mu'min and a believer, Allah intends to give him the greater rewards that He has in store for him. But those rewards can only be used by the believers if they reach the place where they can use it. For example, if He gives them something over here, they can only use it for the amount of time they are here. You know, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, whatever your life is, you will use it then. If Allah gave you eyes, He gave you eyes, so you only use it for the time that you're here. But if He gave you something in the Akhirat, in Jannah, then you have it there, you have that blessing forever. And He wants to give something forever, and hence He has kept Jannah a place for the people to, for those who believe to come there so that they can take full use of their blessings. That's why you see He keeps the blessings away in this dunya from those who believe. And you can look at the lives of the believers and see the lives of those who believed in Allah. When Allah He speaks about the Anbiya, you see most Anbiya were financially in trying times. Right? And I'm saying this just to be nice. Right? In trying times. In our language, it's called being broke. Right? And you see that. The hardships they went through, the things that they went through, you look at them and you see how hard a time we have. Isn't it easy for Allah to say that, you know what, I'm going to help them out here, I'm going to give them something over here? But you see that they also did not want anything here. They know that if they get it here, then it's only going to last until they die. And hence, that example I gave yesterday that came from Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Is that whatever that you ask from Allah, in the sense that you ask Him of the rewards of your ibadat and the ibadat that you're doing and the du'as that you're making, if you ask Him in this dunya, He gives it to you. And if He does give it to you, then it's coming from your home in Jannah. Right? If you want to make another floor on your house, that floor is being transferred from your home in Jannah to over here. So now you got that extra floor that you always wanted, and that Florida room that you always wanted. Right? You got that now, and it's here. And you can enjoy it, but you can only enjoy it for 50, 60 years. But that room that you had in Jannah, if you had gotten it there, you would have had that forever. You see, you would have had that forever. And hence Allah, this is the third reason that we explained yesterday. Why this happens. And Allah wants to give to believers. But really, sometimes what we, and one note I will make here so that we understand, and our people also understand this, because there might be a confusion that, you know, it's not haram to have money or wealth or any of these things. Of course it's good, right? And it's useful, and in Islam has not prohibited anyone from having halal rizq and halal bread. and halal earning and a halal income. In fact, it encouraged it. It wanted people to work hard and get it. We are talking about the value of these things of that the dunya has to offer as opposed to the akhirat. That's what we are trying to discuss. What is the value of these things? You know, because as you know, that maal, Allah had said in the Quran that maal is, this wealth is a fitna of this dunya. It is a zenith of this dunya. It is an ornament in this dunya, not in the akhirat. You might be able to get things done with your wealth in this dunya, but it's useless over there.
Nah.
Right? If you take your wealth in your grave, he will not be able to give, even if you give all of that to the angels to please spare me, it won't help. They're not going to spare you. All that wealth that we thought and we worked so hard for, we see that even if we want that angel of death or the other angels who will come in the grave to harm us and punish us, even if we give all our wealth to those angels, they'll say, what's this? This wealth, you know how hard I worked for this? It's worth a lot. He says, where? Where I come from? Well, it's not worth anything here. You know? It is not worth the paper it's printed on. It's not worth anything here. And we work so hard for it, and we spend so much time for it, and you see what we went through in order to get this. But what happened? At the end, those things that we thought were useful and we worked so hard for, you see at the end, are not going to be that useful. And the life of the Anbiya has shown that. You see, Muslims, on the other hand, you see, those who believe have always been in hard times. And I gave this example before, I'm just going to give this here, but not in detail, because you already know the example, and a lot of you have heard this from me before also. There are Muslims, they used to see the discrepancy between their wealth and the wealth of the kuffar. Now, in Medina, you see that the Muslims were poor. They were, you know, they didn't have a lot of means. But the kuffar of Makkah were rich. They had a lot of wealth. They had a lot of slaves. They had a lot of labor and land. They had money and trade. They have everything. They had name and everything. And here you had Muslims who were hard working, but they didn't have anything. So some Muslims had a complaint, and they went to the Prophet to complain to him. And said that, Ya Rasulullah, what is this? You know, we are the ones who accepted Islam. We are the ones who did this. And Allah is the master of the heavens and the earth. He has the keys to the treasure. Ask Him to open a box for us. Right? Ask Him to open a box for us so at least we get something, right? From it. What is this? Why is He holding back? Why is He holding back? We are the ones who went to the battle of Badr and sacrificed our lives. We did Uhud and all these things. We put our life on the line for His cause. And here He is holding back from us. Why doesn't He give us something? Why does He help us out? So you see, there the messenger replied back to them. And you have heard this reply from me before, but just I want you to understand it again as a reminder. And for those who haven't heard it, they can reflect on it and see what the Prophet had said. So the complaint was that, why don't we get the wealth? We work for Allah. We are the ones who accepted Islam. We are the ones who are Muslim. We pray to Him. We fast. We go for Hajj. We do all the things. And here you see that the 500 list that comes out, Fortune 500, we don't have any of our names there. Why is our name not there? Why don't we get the money, right? How many people's name, how many Muslims' name is there? Except for the oil-rich Arab, you know, those Arab princes, you know, which, you know, it's hard for us to regard them as Muslims anyway. By their actions, if you leave them be, you see that if you're a practicing Mu'min and a Muslim, who wants halal risk and who's only doing halal things, you see that you're in hardships. So they went to the Prophet and said, what's going on over here? So Rasulullah replied back and said, listen, just take this principle and understand the principle that Allah is giving you. He said, what's that principle? He said, listen, if Allah had regarded the money of this world, if He had regarded that this money is worth anything, if this money was worth anything, then first He would give it to the Anbiya and the Prophets before He gave it to His enemies. Because Allah doesn't regard this money and wealth of this world as anything worthy and useful of any value. That's why He hasn't given it to the Anbiya. If He thought that this was good, He would have given it to you. What do you think He's going to hold it back from you? It's only because He knows that this is worthless. This is worthless. He wants you to get the real wealth, the real richness. This is what He wants you to get. And that's why you see He makes you not have the things of this dunya, because it's not worth anything in the eyes of Allah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now my friends, we come to the fourth reason of why Allah puts us through trials. You heard the three reasons, and now you see the fourth reason, and this you see in our times, and the era and period of time that we are living is the most important reason why Allah puts us through trials and hardships. Why Allah puts us through sufferings and difficulties in our life. And especially for a believer. If you believe, you see you'll have to go through hard times. And you know what hard times is? This is the fitna. The fitna is really the temptation to do the wrong things. It is a temptation to get out of this pressure and do something that will make us our lives easier. This is the temptation. So now what happens? You see, the fourth reason why Allah wanted believers, and this is for those who truly believe and they have iman, He makes them go through this, is because Allah wants them and has a task for them and has a duty for them that He wants them to do. And He is preparing them to do that task. My friend, understand this. What does this mean? There's something Allah wants believers to do. He has a goal for them and a task for them. Something major project that they have to do. And Allah wants to get them ready for that task. He wants them to prepare. He wants to prepare believers for that task that He has in store for them. And He wants them to do, and He wants them to get ready for that. And if they are not ready, then that task will not be done. You see, my friends, the task that this Allah has for us, there has never been a time since Adam came to the earth until the last Imam of our time. Since Adam to the last Imam, no non-infallible, no one who's not a masoom has been given the task that the believers have been given in the ghaibat of our Imam. No, non-infallible. If you look at all the history of the Anbiya, you see there has never been a time that Allah has given this task to anyone who's not masoom. That He has given to those people who are living in the ghaibat of our Imam, to the believers. He has given them this task. And that task that He gave to the believers, in the words of Hadith, is called intidhar. Intidhar. Intidhar means to wait for something, to anticipate something. This is the task that He gave us. He says, believers, their job is to do what? Intidharul faraj. To wait for the Imam. To wait for the Imam. My friends, I have explained this to you, what intidhar means, many times before. Right? And again, I want to just, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, to make us understand what's ahead. Intidhar, my friends, it means to wait for something. When do you wait for something? When do you wait for something? For example, you want to wait. You know? You invited a guest and you're waiting for a guest. You know, like for example, you invite me for dinner. You say, you know, next Wednesday, inshallah, I invite you for dinner. I said, alhamdulillah. What time? He says about 9 o'clock, 8:39, whenever you want to come. That's fine. So, time goes by. Wednesday comes, you know. As invited, I come to your house. You know, now obviously I don't want to come early, you know, because obviously when you go early, everyone's getting ready and preparing, you know, they think that why is he early? You know. So I go there a little bit late. I said, you know, I let them get ready and everything, then I'll go there. Alright. So I go there a little bit late. You said 9, I went at 9:15. I went at 9, it's not that late. And I knocked at the door. Now when I approached the house, I saw the lights are closed. I said, maybe they're inside the room. So I knock on the door. You know, no answer. What's this? You know, I knock on the door again. Bell, everything. And then after a while, you come, open the door. Right? You open the door. I look at you, and you are out there rubbing your eyes in your night suit pajamas. I'm looking at you, and looking inside, all the lights are closed, everyone's in their bedrooms. Now what do you think? You know, brother, do you remember you invited me for dinner? Yes. I was waiting for you. We're waiting for you. He said, waiting? What do you mean waiting for me? I mean, you don't look like you are waiting. You know, I mean, the lights are off, everyone's asleep, there's no food on the table. You see, there's nothing, right? You don't look like you're waiting. He said, no, I've been waiting for you, right here. come on in. You know, I said, is this called waiting? My friend, I could understand it if the food was ready on the table, everyone was dressed up, the house was ready, and everything was clean, and then you invite me to come in and said, yes, I was waiting for you. Then I could understand it. But to say that you're not ready, the lights are closed, there's no food on the table, and you're saying, I'm waiting. So we understood, my friends, why did the Ahlul Bayt say, wait for the Imam? What they meant to say is that have the food ready.
Allahu Akbar.
Have your house ready. Be dressed up. Get ready. And when everything's in place, then you start waiting for the Imam. Then you start waiting for the Imam. So what waiting, the word that was hidden inside of waiting that the people never understood, was preparation. What waiting means is to prepare for the Imam, so that when you are prepared, then you can wait for the Imam. Then you can wait for the imam. Ask the reason why, when the most important obligation that was given to believers in the ghaibat of the imam was to do what? Was to wait for the imam. And what was it meaning wait? It means to get everything ready. Get everything ready so that when the imam comes, you can invite him to come. Now, the way we are going, is like we are thinking, and we have made this ideology amongst our people, that we are not going to make the food, we are not going to cook the food. He says, oh, what are you doing? I'm waiting for the imam. To do what? So he can come and make your food? So he can vacuum your house? So he can clean your up? What are you waiting for the imam for? My friends, you get ready so you can wait for the imam.
Teach us.
You get ready so you can wait for the imam. So this is the reason, the job that we have been given is to do what? To prepare for the imam. To prepare for the imam. And this is a task that Allah has not given anyone. Anyone before us who's not masoom. And there's only one group of people who had this task who were not masoom. If I can add one amendment to my statement. One amendment. One group of people who also were given this task. But they were not normal believers, meaning we who accept Islam and we came in. Right? This task was given to one group of people before us. You see, the longest wait believers had to go through before this waiting we are going through right now for the imam to come back. The longest wait that they had to go through was for the birth of the final prophet.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Before this time, these believers that we are waiting for the imam. We have gone through how many years? 1,200 years of waiting for the imam. 1,100 some years. Of waiting for the imam. Before that, after Prophet Isa, to our Prophet was 600 years. Right? And since Prophet Isa was in a different place, and you see that the actual way the believers in Hijaz went through was from the time of Ibrahim all the way to the Prophet. Right? They were waiting. But then there are Anbiya also in the world that they can have, who were actually giving the knowledge of Islam to the people. Right? They're giving the knowledge of Allah to the people. But the actual wait was 600 years from the time of Isa to our Prophet. And the task of preparing for the coming of the last Prophet was given to the ancestors of the Prophet. One particular group, the ancestors of the Prophet, and you have heard the history of the ancestors, I went through that with you. Hashem, Abdul Muttalib, Abu Talib, all of these people were doing what? Preparing for the coming of the last Prophet. They're preparing for the coming of the last Prophet. So this was one particular group, and they made it such with wisdom, that they made it such that the last Prophet did come and he was able to give his message. I mean, when we look at it, what they have done for the Prophet, we have went through that. How many assassination attempts were made on their lives by the enemies of Islam in order to kill the light of the Prophet? You know, Hashim, his life was, there was assassination attempt on his life. There was an assassination attempt on the life of Abdul Muttalib many times. There was assassination attempt on the life of Abdullah. Right? There was even an assassination attempt on Amina. They tried to kill her also. Because the knowledge that the last Prophet is coming was known all around. He was coming. And hence all these people were their lives were at risk and their lives were attempted for. But they went through all those trials to do what? To make sure that the last prophet does come. And that's why you see the sacrifices they made for the last prophet. See, Allah is the one who rewards. You see, if you are a Muslim in the eyes of people, it doesn't matter. If you are a good Muslim in the eyes of people, it doesn't matter. If you are a religious Muslim in the eyes of people, it doesn't matter. Why? Because the people will be in worse situation than you in the Day of Judgment. Right? The same people that you are thinking, I need to be a better Muslim because that guy is looking at me. That guy is going to be in a worse situation than you are. He's going to be in a worse situation than what you are doing right now. And here you see that when you look at this, the only one that it matters to, the only person it matters that you prove that you are a Muslim is Allah.
Allahu Akbar.
Allah is the only one you need to prove yourself to. Right? He's the only one. You need to prove yourself to Allah. If you prove yourself to Allah, then you know what? That is enough for you. And that's why you see, those people who took from Islam, who stole from Islam, all of them are regarded as great Muslims. But the one who gave everything for Islam is regarded as a kafir. My friends, understand this. The only mistake Abu Talib did was that he gave everything for the sake of Islam. That's the only mistake. If he also took and stole, maybe he would be a Muslim also today. He would be a Muslim also. Everyone would regard him as a Muslim. Alhamdulillah, he's a good Muslim. Why? Because he stole from Islam. Right? And you know what they stole. Right? That's not my subject. But the issue is that I'm talking about Abu Talib now. You see Abu Talib, what the role he played and the sacrifices he did just so that the last messenger can come about and make a statement.
Yes.
To propagate Islam. You see, he put his own children in the bed of the Prophet so that if the enemies attack the Prophet, it will be his children who would die. You see, it would be his children who would die. And then when the Prophet came to make the announcement in the invitation to his family, what happened? Abu Lahab was saying, what's he has to say? He has nothing to say. They knew what he was going to say. And they wanted him not to speak. But who stood up and said, listen, everyone shut up, let him speak. You see, Abu Talib. So the Prophet, when he was orphaned and had no home, who gave him a home?
Abu Talib.
Abu Talib. Right? And who was the one that who would make sure that it's the Prophet who stayed at home and his children go out and work because he wanted to keep the Prophet safe?
Abu Talib.
Abu Talib. So, the one who gave home to the Prophet is Abu Talib. The one who assisted him in times of hardship was Abu Talib. The one who always was protecting him at the cost of the lives of his children was Abu Talib. The one who made everyone shut up so that the Prophet can proclaim Islam to the people was Abu Talib. So it was Abu Talib who was behind the Prophet giving the message of Islam. Now of all the people who were around him and at that time, you see, that person who did all this so that prophethood can be achieved and that the Prophet could come and proclaim Islam to the people. Imagine what his position is in the eyes of Allah. All I can say is this much. That it is because of these sacrifices that Abu Talib made and that iman that he had, the iman of sacrifice that he had, that Allah wanted all the 12 imams to come from his project. My friend, Imam Ali is not Abu Layma. It is Abu Talib who's Abu Layma. Because Imam Ali is an Imam himself. Abu Talib is the father of 12 Imams. And I'm just giving you this reward that Allah gave to him for his sacrifices. Why? Because there was no Masoom until the Prophet was born. There was no Masoom who raised Abu Talib, who trained Abu Talib, who looked after Abu Talib and made him what he is. You see, there was no Masoom after the Prophet came. That's different. But he was the one who did that. And you see, the same expectation that Allah had from Abu Talib is the expectation he has from the believers of today. Those who believe in the Imam today, that expectation of to prepare the grounds for the coming of the Imam. This is what he has given today. And that is the task. So now, in order to get ready for the task, obviously, Allah is not just going to listen to our words and hear our speech and say that, yes, these people are ready.
Ya Allah!
Yeah. Right? He's not going to do that. See, and you see that example also in the ayat of the Quran. Right? Allah says that in the Quran to Ibrahim. He says, وَإِذِبْتَلَىٰ إِبْرَاهِيمَ رَبُّهُ بِكَلِمَاتٍ. He says, remember that time when Allah tested Ibrahim with some words. Some tests. Allah tested. Ibtala is again from the word bala. Fitna. When he tested Ibrahim and فَأَتَّمَّهُنَّ. So Ibrahim completed those tests. He completed those tests. Then Allah says, فَإِنِّي جَائِلُكَ لِلنَّاسِ إِمَامًا. Now you have completed the test. I am making you an imam for mankind. You see, Allah wanted to prepare Ibrahim to be an imam. So what did he do? He made him go through some tests. Understand this, my friends. He made him go through some tests. Some tests he went through. Ibrahim went through those tests. What were they? You see, like, everything we have, right? And just an example I'll give you. If you want to make a car, those who make cars, when they make a car, at first, they want to make sure that the car runs also before they sell it. Right? So in order to get this car to the market, they need to do a test drive. They test the machine, they test the brakes, they test the engine, the tires, and all these things to make sure that it runs. It has no faults, right? Why? Because once it goes into the market and it's on the road, people are going to use it, and people use it in different ways. So now when the people are going to use it, those people who manufacture the car have to make sure that the car is prepared to face the conditions of the road.
Yes.
You know, to whatever the conditions of the road are, whether it's potholes or straight holes, whatever it is. You have to face those conditions. So now, these cars are tested in order to do that. Everything that is made is tested for the goal that it's made for. Whatever reason it's made for, it's being tested. So now, when these tests are going through, and these tests happen, and they go through that test to make sure that when it goes to the real field of battle, where it's going to take on the real elements, then it's ready for it. Just like that, you see, that when Allah wanted to prepare Ibrahim for imamat, for the position of imamat. So he tested him. At first he tested him through his wealth. He said, Ibrahim, give me. Person came and asked for him for one thing. He gave him all the food he had in his house. He passed that test. Then Allah tested him with his life. So he made Ibrahim jump into the fire. And Ibrahim passed that test. Then Allah then said, now I'm going to test you with your children. Now you sacrifice your son for me.
Yes.
So he sacrificed his son. Three tests Ibrahim went through to become an imam. The test of sacrificing wealth, the test of sacrificing life, and the test of sacrificing children. So we understood from here that an imam is someone who is not concerned with neither wealth nor life nor children. Someone who's ready to sacrifice all these three things, then he's prepared to become an imam.
Yes.
Then he can become an imam. Otherwise, all these things, and that's why Allah says that when he's going to test believers, what did he say? وَنَقْسِمْ مِنَ الْأَمْوَالِ وَالْأَنْفُسِ وَالثَّمَرَاتِ And with the loss of wealth, life and children. And when you go through these three things, then you are capable of being an imam. Just like that, now we see how he's able to test us. Because of the lack of time today, I will not go into details of these things. I will explain this these issues tomorrow, inshallah. As to what happened in our last speech, we'll go through that. What Allah wants us to be and how He wants to become. Just like that, we see that Allah, when He has a goal for us, it is to prepare for the Imam of the time. To prepare for Him to come. And now, He wants us to make sure that we are ready. If we say we are ready, should Allah believe in us? Should Allah believe in us?
No actions, no.
He has to test us first to make sure that we are ready. That we are ready. He makes us go through tests so that we are ready. And that's the reason we see that a mu'min faces trials in this dunya. He faces trials because Allah wants us to be ready so that we are able to do the work and the task that is in store for us. Because when the imam will come back, it will not be easy. It will not be easy. It is said that before the imam comes, the situation will be such, and the fitna will be such, and the trials will be such, that if believers are going to hide in caves or rat holes, then the enemies are going to come there and get them. The enemies are going to come there and get them. It is said that if they are hiding in closed doors, then the walls are going to tell the enemies where the believers are hidden. The enemy will be so advanced that they will be able to listen to what's going on inside closed doors. My friend, understand this. This is what will happen. And in that time, if a mu'min is not tested, when the imam will come back, if a mu'min is not tested, and you know every mu'min who is a mu'min, he is inviting the imam to come. He's asking the imam to come. If he is not tested, then Allah is not going to send the imam. Because that example he had shown before. You see, that example he shown before, he has shown the reason why he doesn't do that. Why? Because he wants us to understand that when the people of Kufa called the imam, imam went there. Imam went there at their call. Right? He went to the call, right? He went there to the call. And why he went there, I'll also explain, inshallah, tomorrow. Right, when we explain more about this issue. But he went there for the call. When he went there for the call, what happened? This person, you know, I mean, when he went there, you saw what happened. Those people who invited him, they weren't prepared for the task that is ahead of them.
Thank you.
I mean, they couldn't handle Ibn Ziyad, let alone Yazid. When Ibn Ziyad came, they all wore their diapers. And stayed in the home. That's what happened to them. Ibn Ziyad came there and they all went inside and they were finished. But when they went in their homes, what happened? It was Imam Hussein who was left alone. See, it was Imam Hussein who was left alone. And this, my friends, is what happens when we are not prepared, when we are not ready. And now we see that when you leave the Imam alone, then the Imam, you know, he does call Halman Nasirin. He does call for help. You know, he does call for help. But you know what? He doesn't need your help. You know, if you want to come and give your sacrifice, go ahead, give your life. If you want to come and give your life, go ahead, come and give your life. For Allah. It's for your own good. If you leave the Imam alone, he is making the call, Hal min Nasirin Yansuruna. And he's asking for help, but the help doesn't mean that he needs your help. The help that he's asking for doesn't mean that he needs your help. Because, you know, if you don't come, if you don't go forward, if no one comes forward, then the Imam has Ali Akbar to offer. Imam Hussein has Ali Akbar to sacrifice. He's going to sacrifice Ali Akbar. Right? You don't want to come? Go ahead, don't come. But you know what? I have my offerings for Allah. I'm going to offer Ali Akbar. You know, if Abbas was the light of Ahlul Bayt, Ali Akbar was the soul of Ahlul Bayt. He was the ruh of Ahlul Bayt, the household of Hussein. You know, Ali Akbar's position in the house, in the household of Ali and Fatima, was a unique position. It was a unique position. One of the facts is that Ali Akbar was a reminder to the whole of Ahlul Bayt. Ahlul Bayt was a reminder to the whole of Ahlul Bayt. And whenever they looked at him, they were reminded of the Messenger of Allah. Because, you see, Ali Akbar was created in the same way that the Prophet was created. If you look at his creation, if you look at his behavior, if you look at his appearance, if you look at his personality, you will see that Ali Akbar resembled the Prophet in such a way that even those who knew the Prophet well could not differentiate between the two. You know, and Imam Hussein, his mission was such, and Allah's planning is such, that Allah wanted a proof on the enemy for all times. He wanted a proof on the enemy for all times. Really, this is the reason why Ali Akbar was made this way. So that the enemy knows that the one they are killing is the one who looks just like their prophet.
Woe be unto them.
Who looks just like their prophet. I mean, imagine, who would do that? If you know someone looks like that, at least spare him, man. Do not kill him. He was the picture of the prophet. He was a picture of the Prophet whose picture was such that people would look at him and they would know. They would come from far and wide just to come to the house of Imam Hussein, knock at the doors of Hussein. When Hussein would come out, they would say, "We just want to see Ali Akbar. We just want to see Ali Akbar," because they wanted to see the Prophet. And when Ali Akbar would come, they would make the ziyarat of the Prophet. This was Ali Akbar. And Allah had him there as a hujjat and as a proof against the enemy. That this is the picture that you are going to destroy. You are destroying the picture of your own prophet. And hence in his speech also you see Ali Akbar was so much like the prophet that when he spoke it was whoever heard him and who had heard the prophet before they would be thinking that this is the prophet who's speaking. That's why Imam Hussein always had Ali Akbar and he had him give the azan. So that when he gave the azan, it reminded him of the Prophet and the Messenger. And when the night of Ashura came, you see, Ali Akbar was always a support for Imam Hussein. Imagine, not only in his looks and his talk and this and that, but also in his iman and in his ma'rifat, in his recognition and his strength and bravery and valor, you see, Ali Akbar was an example for the whole family. Obviously, this is a household that's filled with examples. This is a household that everywhere you look, you see gems and jewels. You see these people who are examples of mankind everywhere. But in that house, if everyone had a special jewel, it was Ali Akbar. And you know, when Imam Hussein had heard the news of Muslim ibn Aqil being killed in Kufa, he heard that he was grieved for Muslim ibn Aqil and he looked down. Ali Akbar was there with him. He said, "Father, why are you worried?" He said, "No, I'm just grieving over Muslim ibn Aqil." He said, "Is there any reason to worry?" And Imam Hussein asked him, "What do you think, my son?" And Ali Akbar just asked him one question. "Just father, just tell me one thing. Are we on the truth or we are not on the truth? Are we on the haq or are we not on the haq?" Imam Hussein said, "For sure we are on the haq." Then Ali Akbar said, "Then it doesn't matter where we are going and how we are getting there. As long as we are walking on the truth, then this is the way. As long as we are walking on the truth, wherever it leads us, it will lead us. If it takes us to Kufa, so be it. If it takes us to Karbala, so be it." So be it, my friends. Now you see this Ali Akbar, who has this ma'rifat, that Imam Hussein and the whole household is proud of. You see that on the night of Ashura, that Ali Akbar was in the tent of his mother. Umm Layla. Umm Layla is the mother of Ali Akbar. And Umm Layla knows that tomorrow there is death that is going to come to her child. There is no way that he is going to live through tomorrow. And Imam Hussein, when he went past the tent of Umm Layla, he saw this scene. That Umm Layla is sitting, Ali Akbar is lying down with his head in her lap. And she is combing the hair of Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar, 18 years have I raised you. 18 years have brought you up. So that tomorrow I will see this picture of mine going and being destroyed. Ali Akbar, he was not anxious, he was just relaxed and he knew what he is facing. But you see, when you have that much ma'rifat and you know that your death is for sure tomorrow, then the night before you see that Ali Akbar was sleeping in the lap of Umm Layla. This is that sleep. If you see that sleep, my friends, it's not easy to sleep when you know your life is in danger. You know that when your life is in danger, it's not easy to sleep. If you want to know the iman of Ali Akbar, then understand that his sleeping on the night of Ashura was the sleeping of Ali on the night of Hijrat. Ali slept on the bed of the Prophet, and Allah said that because of that sleep, I am giving you all my pleasures. Now you are the master of my pleasure. Whoever Ali is pleased with, I will be pleased with him. Now you see Ali Akbar, he is sleeping on the lap of his mother. He is sleeping on the lap of his mother. And you see that he is sleeping in rest without any worries. This is the iman of Ali Akbar. This was the iman of Ali Akbar. So now when the morning came and Imam Hussein now wanted to give the last hujjat on these people. So now he told Ali Akbar that, go my son, give the azan. Give the azan. And he called out the azan. He called out the azan. The azan was heard throughout the field. The enemies heard it. And many of them who didn't know who they were facing, many of them, they just came for money. They just came for dunya. They don't even know who they're fighting against. They just came there because of reward. Money was, prize was being offered. So they came there. And when they heard this, those old people who were companions of the Prophet, when they heard this, there was talk amongst the people. This is the sound of Rasulullah. We know his sound. We know his sound. The sound of Rasulullah. And that same azan was heard in the tents. Imam Hussein started to weep. And their ladies were heard from the tents crying. They knew that this is the last azan Ali Akbar would give. The last chance they had to listen to the azan of Ali Akbar. So now when the azan was given, right after the azan, the prayer was done. And after the prayer, the battle began. The battle began in such a way that the companions of Hussein, they organized themselves and they had a meeting that night and they had spoken to one another and they had said that until we are alive, we will not let the children of Hussein go to the battlefield. We will not let them go to the battlefield. We will die before they go. We will give our life before they go. And truthfully and faithfully, they stayed on their words. Each of them gave their lives. Everyone gave their lives. And then when everyone had given their lives and none of the companions was alive, now only Ahlul Bayt were left. Now only the family of the Prophet is left. Now only the relatives of Hussein are left. The nephews of Hussein, the brothers of Hussein. Now only the people inside of Ahlul Bayt are left. When they are left, now it was Hussein's turn. And he saw that no one is there except for Ahlul Bayt. So it was Imam Hussein who went to Ali Akbar, and he looked at Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar was anxiously looking at Imam Hussein and said, "Father, allow me to go to the battlefield." You see, with every one of his nephew, whether it was Qasim or Ono Muhammad or anyone, Imam Hussein would say no to them. He would say, no, go back to your mother. But when Ali Akbar asked, Imam Hussein did not flinch. He said, yes, my Akbar, you have the permission to go. But before you go, who am I to allow you? You need to go and ask the ladies who are concerned about you. Go and ask them. Ask your mother. She's in your tent. She's in the tent. And there you see Ali Akbar went to Umm Layla. He went to the tent of Umm Layla, and when he appeared in the tent, Umm Layla knew what this was about. And she said, Ali Akbar, you came here and you're asking to go to the battle of death and you want to go and die in the way of Allah. And then Ali Akbar said, yes, yes mother, I want to do that. Allow me to go there. Allow me to go there. Then you see Ali Akbar, Umm Layla said, who am I to allow you? Who am I to give permission to you? I'm not the one who raised you. You are my son, but I didn't raise you. It is Zainab who raised you. Go and ask Zainab. go and ask Zainab. Ask her first, and then you can go. So when he heard that, he knew, Ali Akbar knew and understood. It was easy to get permission from her mother, but from her aunt, from his aunt, it was different. Aunt Zainab was different. She was the one who raised him, and now he knew that he had to explain to her. He had to make sure that he asked her in such a way that she allows her. So now Ali Akbar made the plan, and he went to the tent of Zainab where Zainab was staying, and then he pulled open the tent and saw Zainab sitting, and right away Ali Akbar went in the lap of Zainab and put his head there, and Zainab said, "My Ali Akbar, what is it? What is the matter?" Ali Akbar said, "My aunt Zainab, every time I had a question, I would come to you. Would you answer one question for me? Just answer one question for me." And Zainab said, "Whatever, my son, ask me. What is it, Ali Akbar? Whatever you want to ask me." And then listen to the question of Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar says, that Aunt Zainab, just answer one question, and that question is, tell me, who is greater? Grandmother Fatima or you?
Ya Allah!
Who is greater in status? Are you greater? Or is Fatima greater? Zainab said, "What kind of a question is that, Ali Akbar? What kind of a question is that? Obviously, my mother Fatima, where is she and where am I? Fatima's rank is way above my rank." Then when she said that, Ali Akbar said, "Then my aunt Zainab, are you willing to sacrifice your son for Fatima's son?" Are you willing to sacrifice your son for Fatima's son? On the day of judgment, when you will go and meet your mother, and my grandmother Fatima is going to come holding her broken ribs. She's going to come in front of you and say, "My Zainab, was your son worth more than my son Hussein? Why didn't you sacrifice him for my son?" Zainab said, "Ali Akbar, you go. Go, Ali Akbar, I bid you farewell. Go now to the battlefield." Zainab bid farewell to Ali Akbar, but you know what happened? You know what happened? Ali Akbar wasn't able to leave the tent. You see, this was the first martyr that Ahlul Bayt are giving in Karbala. And every lady in Karbala, everyone in Karbala wants to see Ali Akbar, wants to touch Ali Akbar. Every time Ali Akbar wants to leave, someone would come and say, "Brother, stay. Just one more look at your face. Let me touch you one more time." Someone would come and say, "My son Ali Akbar, look at me one more time." They won't let him leave. Hamid ibn Muslim say that when Ali Akbar was leaving, "I saw the tent, the door of the tent, go up and down 7 times. I went closer to see what was happening. I saw that every time Ali Akbar would want to go, someone would pull him back and say, 'Ali Akbar, one more time. Stay with us one more time.'" It was like a dead body that was leaving, and everyone wanted to greet it one last time. Ali Akbar, when he was able to get out of the tent, he came to his father. His father had the horse ready. He said, "Ali Akbar, get on the steed, Ali Akbar. Get on this horse, you're going." Ali Akbar, he got on the horse. And Hussein looked at Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar looked at Hussein. And then Ali Akbar said, "My father, I'm leaving my father." And Hussein said, "Go ahead, my son, go and fight in the way of Allah." And when he started going, Ali Akbar went a little bit forward, and he saw that Hussein, his eyes were crying. Tears were rolling down his ears, and he was being pulled towards the house. He was being pulled towards the horse, and he was walking behind Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar turned around, looked at Hussein, and said, "Father, what happened? You bid me farewell. You have let me go. Why are you following me?" He said, "My son, you don't know. You don't have a child like Ali Akbar. You don't have a son like Ali Akbar. If you knew, if you had a son like Ali Akbar, you don't know what it takes to let go of him in the battlefield." Ali Akbar now faced the enemy, and he started to go towards the enemy. Hussein looked up at the sky and raised his hands and said these words and said, "Allah be a witness today that I am sending someone to the battlefield who in his looks and his behavior is the example of your messenger, the greatest human being. I am sending Ali Akbar to the battlefield." Now that Ali Akbar is going towards the battlefield, Ali Akbar, as is the case with the rest of the people, and they are giving prizes now. Who can beat this lad will get this much prize. And they are raising the prize because now one person at a time they're coming and fighting. Ali Akbar, who can face this guy? And we'll give that. So prizes are giving out. And you see warriors, they're taking prizes to come out and fight Ali Akbar. One by one they come out, and each one that Ali Akbar faces, he kills them. Everyone that he faces, he kills them. And he kills them in such a way that now, after a while, after some people die, now no one wants to fight him. Now they want to come to him all at once. So some group comes from this side, Ali Akbar is able to ward them off and kill them. Some group comes from the right side, and Ali Akbar goes towards them and kills them. And now you see there was no one who's willing to come out. So now Ali Akbar takes charge, and he starts attacking the right side of the army. He goes through the right side of the army, and he attacks them and he kills them. And from the left side he goes. How many people he killed is not known, but it's in the hundreds of how many people he had killed. Ali Akbar is a brave soldier. He is a warrior who has been trained by Abbas. Ali Akbar is fighting in such a way that now they look at the battle of Ali Akbar, and they are remembering the battle of Ali, that how Ali had fought. You see Ali Akbar with such courageousness and bravery, he goes through the lines and he kills people. And now as they are fighting, Ali Akbar, every time he would look at Abbas and say, "My master, my teacher, tell me how am I doing in this battle. Tell me, have I been a good student or not?" Abbas is looking at Ali Akbar with pride as Ali Akbar fought the enemy, and he was fighting in such a way that now no one wants to fight him. In the tent, his mother Umm Layla now is worried. What happened to Ali Akbar? She tells Fizza, "Go and look at the face of Hussein. See if it changes color. If it changes color, come and tell me. So now you see Fizza is looking at Hussein. Hussein, he knows what Layla is thinking, and he says to Layla, he sends words to Layla that, you know, Allah accepts the dua of a mother. You know that Allah accepts the dua of a mother. And Layla, when she heard that, she knew that she had the allowance to call him, because no one wants to fight Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar is walking around alone in the battlefield. Layla calls out and makes dua to Allah that, "Oh Allah, who has reunited Yusuf with Yaqub. Allah, you have united Yusuf with Yaqub. I want you to unite Ali Akbar with Hussein for one last time." Ali Akbar, when he sees that no one is fighting, Allah accepted the dua. Ali Akbar comes back. He comes back. And when Hussein sees Ali Akbar coming back, he says, Ali Akbar, why did you come back? He says, my father, no one wants to fight me. Did you see my fight? And Hussein says, my son, I'm proud of you. And Ali Akbar said, my father, I will make you prouder if only I had a drop of water on my tongue. Three days of thirst has made me such that I cannot go on like this. I need, if I had some water, then I would have shown you how I really fight. Imam Hussein, you see, it was hard for Imam Hussein. Ali Akbar is asking him for something. You know, Ali Akbar is asking him for something. My friends, Ali Akbar is that son of Imam Hussein who never asked Imam Hussein for anything in his life. Ali Akbar was the son of Hussein who never asked anything of Imam Hussein, from Imam Hussein. You know why? Because when Ali Akbar was born, at that time the sister of Hussein, Zainab, did not have a child. She had a child very late in her life. She did not have a child until then. And there she asked Imam Hussein that you already have a boy. I want to raise this boy for you. Imam Hussein said, this is your, he is yours now. And from that time onward, it was Zainab who would look after Ali Akbar. She would look after Ali Akbar. And she would take care of him in every way. In every way. And as Ali Akbar was growing, Ali Akbar would always go to her and ask her for something. Whatever he needs, he would go to Zainab and said, Aunt Zainab, I need this. And Zainab would do it. And it became such that even she used to joke around with Hussein, that Hussein, with a mother like me, Ali Akbar doesn't need anyone else to ask from. You know, Imam Hussein as a father wanted Ali Akbar, because any father would want his child to ask him for something. You know, any father who's a father would want his child that come and ask me for something. You know, if he sees him asking someone else, he would feel bad. You want your child to ask you for something. So now you see, Ali Akbar was that child who always asked Zainab, and Zainab would fulfill whatever Ali Akbar wanted. He fulfilled whatever Ali Akbar wanted. So now you see that this time came. This time when Ali Akbar came from the battlefield and asked Imam Hussein for water. Imagine how hard it is for Imam Hussein. How hard it is for Imam Hussein that he couldn't fulfill that one wish Ali Akbar had from him. How hard was it for Imam Hussein that Ali Akbar asked him for something and he cannot give it, and this is just some water, some drops of water. Hussein said, Ali Akbar, I cannot, Ali Akbar, I don't have water, but here's what I'll do. Ali Akbar, come close to me, Ali Akbar. Hussein hugged Ali Akbar and said, Ali Akbar, take the juice from my tongue, whatever moisture is in my tongue, suck it from it and then go to the battlefield. Ali Akbar came close to Hussein. When Hussein put out his tongue, Ali Akbar saw the tongue of Hussein and he shrieked and went back. Hussein said, what happened, Ali Akbar? Why did you go back? He said, my father, you are thirstier than I am. You have thorns on your tongues. You have thorns on your tongue. Then Hussein said, then go, my son. Now only Rasulullah will give drink to you. Go and get the drink from Rasulullah. And so now Ali Akbar, when he went to the battlefield now. Now Ali Akbar went to the battlefield and he started attacking again. And as he's attacking again, he went through the army on this side and that side. But now you see two men, there are other people who made a plan. We need to get him down. How do we get him down? Two men came, one from behind, one from the front. One came from the front side, Anas came from the front side. He came from the front side, and Murair came from the back side. Ali Akbar was looking at the person in the front, and he's trying to ward him off, but the deception was from the back side. When Murair came from the back side, he put the thrust, that spear, into the back of Ali Akbar. The thread went from the back into the heart and through his chest. It came out from the other side. Anas now, when you look at how Ali Akbar was killed, on the other hand, Anas thrust the spear from the front side. As he thrust the front side, it came from the back side. So two spears are in Ali Akbar now. Two spears, one that went from the front side, the other that came from the back side. And Ali Akbar on the horse, and the spear had gone through the heart and the chest of Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar now is on the horse, and he's on the horse. Now Ali Akbar wasn't able to get off the horse. You see what happened is that Ali Akbar couldn't get off the horse. So now he went forward and hugged the head of the horse. He hugged the head of the horse, and he wasn't able to fall down from the horse. He's trying to hold himself back from that injury he has. He is now on the horse, and he is losing his consciousness, and the blood is fusing out. And now, as he's on the horse in that situation, this is where tragedy happened. The horse, instead of coming to the tents of Hussein, went into the tents of the army. Horse went into the tents of the army. When the horse went into the tents of the army, and they saw that Ali Akbar is handicapped, now everyone would come forward and strike Ali Akbar on the back. And they would strike him and strike him with their sword. They would hit him and they would strike him with their sword. They had so many injuries Ali Akbar had on his back, that his whole back was injured and there was bleeding everywhere. And Ali Akbar now on the horse, as he came back, as the horse came back, Ali Akbar gained consciousness and he called out to his father. And when Hussein, when he saw Ali Akbar and he heard the call of Ali Akbar, now Hussein is going towards the battlefield. He's going towards the battlefield. He's going right. He's going left. They say, no, Ali Akbar is that way. Go that way. Ali Akbar is there. Hussein said, I can't see. I have lost my sight. Ali Akbar is gone. I've lost my sight. I cannot see now. Ali Akbar is gone. Where is Ali Akbar? Ali Akbar, call me so I can come to you. Ali Akbar, call me so I can come to you. Ali Akbar now, as Hussein comes near him, Ali Akbar calls out to Hussein and says, Father, see, Haza Jaddi Rasulullah. He said, Father, you are right. You are truthful. This is my grandfather, Rasulullah. And he brought water for me. He brought water for me. He brought water for me. Hussein came to the side of Ali Akbar. My friends, just a few more statements, and inshallah, may Allah bless you. May you be blessed and give your condolences to Fatima. Give your condolences to Fatima. Ali Akbar is dying now. He is taking his last breath. Hussein reaches the side of Ali Akbar. He puts Ali Akbar's head on his lap. He says, Ali Akbar, what happened, my son? What happened? I'll take you back. Your mother and your aunt are waiting for you in the tent. And Ali Akbar couldn't say anything. He is holding his hands on his chest. He doesn't want his father to see the pain he is in. He doesn't want his father to see what he's going through. He hides the spear. It is cut off. He's hiding the spear. And his hands are hiding the spear. Imam Hussein said, Ali Akbar, Ali Akbar, come, come. I need help. I need your help to take you, Ali Akbar. I need your help. I'm an old father, you know, and you are a young son I'm losing. Ali Akbar, my back has been broken. Come, Ali Akbar, I need your help. Put your arms around my neck so I can pick you up, Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar takes one arm and puts it around the neck of Hussein. Hussein said, Ali Akbar, why don't you put both arms around? Why don't you put both your arms around my neck? Ali Akbar cannot say anything. Hussein takes his hand and sees the spear that is stuck inside his chest. He sees the spear stuck inside his chest and he realizes that Ali Akbar's life is clinging to that spear. He knows that Ali Akbar's life is clinging to that spear. He knows that that spear is in the heart of Ali Akbar. He knows it's in the heart of Ali Akbar. Hussein sees the spear and he understands the situation. And he says, Ali Akbar, now I see the pain you're going through, Ali Akbar. Let me relieve you of this pain, Ali Akbar. Let me relieve you of this pain. Ali Akbar, just put your arms to the side. You have anything to say? He says, Father, you know, my father, all I have to say to you is that, you know, I've heard from my elders that when a young person dies, someone who's young, someone who's strong, when he dies, it's hard for the soul to come out, and hence he struggles to die. He struggles. The soul takes its time going out. He struggles to die, and his feet will shake, and his feet will rub against each other. They would rub against each other in pain. My father, I don't want you to see that pain that I'm going to go through when my life is taken. When I will lose my life, I don't want you to see that pain. Hussein said, my son, I will soon be following you. This test that Hussein is going through. Now Hussein said, Ali Akbar, put your hands to the side. Hussein puts his hand on the chest of Ali Akbar. How many times did Hussein put his hands on his chest in his life? To love him and to caress him, to seal him, to know that he's a son. Hussein now is looking for that spear on the chest. His hand reaches that spear. His hand reaches that spear. He puts the other hand on the other arm. Now I call Rasulullah. Ya Rasulullah, come from Medina. Rasulullah, come from Medina. And don't come alone. Bring grandfather Ibrahim with you also. Bring grandfather Ibrahim, bring Ismail also, so they can see how a sacrifice is given, how Zibh-e-Azim is done, how a great sacrifice is done. Hussein is showing it in Karbala. Hussein, with Ali Akbar in front of him, puts a hand on that chest and he calls out to Ali and says, Father, taking the door of Khaybar was easy. Try to take out the spear. When you have child, he takes it out, saying, Bismillah, wa billah, wa fi sabilillah, wa ala millati rasulillah. He takes out that beer. Ali Akbar, you go, inna lillah, wa inna ilaihi
Ya Hussein!
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 God save!
God!